But that's the old me.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great Saturday. Hope you're maybe getting out to enjoy the Pensacola Christmas Parade today. If you do, please yell at me. I'm going to be on the Pensacon float in the parade, which is launching right after the show at 5:30. If you're listening live here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Of course, if you're listening on the podcast version, you might be listening before that. You might be listening after that, in which case, we're glad you're listening either way, but we're glad to be here to bring you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. Joining me to do so, as he does so very often on the show, please welcome from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
I feel like we got a good show planned for today, so everybody make sure to stick around. If you don't get a chance to check it all out live, as Julio mentioned, we do have a podcast. You can go check it out at your leisure, maybe when you're in the gym, maybe when you're in the car cruising, but we would love for you to add us to the RSS feed. Speaking of the feed, Julio, I don't know if you caught it, but something recently popped up in my memories on Facebook, and I was kind of curious to get your take on it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Not sure. What are you talking about?
So I posted 3 years ago, hey, if you happen to be listening to Let's Go Pensacola, you might hear me talking about movies and pop culture on there. Can you believe that it's been 3 years since I kind of started doing this with you? I mean, not consistently every week, but a pretty substantial amount of time.
I both can and can't believe it.
Talk to me. I think I know where you're going.
Like, in some ways it feels like it was yesterday, in some ways it feels like it's been 20 years.
Yeah, time gets like that, I think.
I think that's just how, like, time in general seems to work these days. Like, you know, everything going on in the world, like, you know, like, it feels like the election was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was like, not much more than 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know if it's just that we're inundated with so much in our daily lives that time seems to pass faster than it actually does. Like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, it used to be like, it would seem like when you were a kid, and I know some of it is getting older, and that when you're a kid, it feels like, you know, like when you're waiting for Christmas, because we're in the season, and you know, it just seems like forever until Christmas is going to get here. And now it's like, God, it's Christmas already. I know some of that comes with age, but I don't think it's just that. I think that the world has just gotten faster.
Yeah, absolutely. So 3 years that we've been talking movies and pop culture, that's amazing. 10 years that I've been hosting the Pensacon. Actually, I think this will be the 11th year I've been hosting the Pensacon Short Film Festival. Here I am still, to this day, not knowing how to properly do credits. I think you and I have talked about it a little bit, but I'm actually in the process of working on my short film, and I'm working on the credits currently, and I have no idea how to do it.
Okay. You mean you the actual, like, crawl of the credits, like for the end of the movie?
That, okay, yeah, let me elaborate. That's I'm glad you brought that up. The actual graphics part of it, I can handle. I don't know who to credit. I don't know if I'm supposed to put like a copyright on it. I don't know what official things need to be included and what doesn't.
I can tell you definitely want to put a copyright on it, because you don't want to end up like George Romero.
That's a fair point.
That's what happened with Night of the Living Dead. Like, it went into public domain because they forgot to put the copyright notice on the film.
Oops.
So, yeah. Lots and lots
definitely
of people.
That.
Lots and lots of people who have shown that movie over the years for free because they don't have to pay, because there's no copyright notice on it. So it's public domain.
Throw that in my notes real quick.
Yeah,
if
sure.
You are attending Pensacon this year, obviously you and I, Julio and I, are both involved in that. We would love for everybody to come out if you're listening to this, and hopefully stop by the film festival. you might even get a screening of this documentary that I'm working on. It's called The Plunge. It's focused on the pinball community and sort of the way that it ties into community all around and the way that niche interests kind of bring people together. And I think Julio, myself, everybody listening to this can kind of relate to that in some way. Commonalities, you know, you find this thing that maybe you don't realize so many people are interested in, and then you get to celebrate those things with people, and through that, you get to form relationships, and like, what a great thing is that? So that's kind of what the documentary is about. I'm trying to keep it reasonably short, because I know that watching films, another thing that you and I do for the Pensacon Short Film Festival, we have a whole lot to get through, and I kind of like to keep a tight pace, so I've got hours and hours, probably close to 25 hours of footage. I'm trying to squeeze that into under 15 minutes.
Yeah, well, and you know, speaking of that, the other thing that I would say to make sure that you include in the credits is a special thanks to Julio Diaz for being the most awesome. No, I'm just kidding.
That was the first thing I put in there.
I have absolutely nothing to do with this film. No reason to be thanked in it whatsoever. But you know, I just thought I'd throw that in there. Yeah, I certainly wouldn't be the first person to have absolutely nothing to do with the film to get a credit on it.
I think those are called executive producers.
Yeah, exactly. you know, it's one of those things where, like, you know, I mean, oh, great. I can give you a really, really great example of that. The Buffy the Vampire Slayer series and its spinoff Angel had executive producer credits for the director and producer of the original movie. They had absolutely nothing to do with the TV series, which was a complete, you know, I'll say it was a complete 180 from the movie, but it's a good like 145 degree shift from the movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
But because they had in their contract, they got credit as executive producers and they made money off of this, you know, huge hit series that they really had absolutely nothing to do with.
Huh.
At the same time, it becomes interesting because somebody who didn't get credit that maybe a lot of people didn't know had something to do with the series and maybe had a little bit more to do with it that, you know, maybe was just a little bit more hands-on than those people were, is of course the legendary Dolly Parton.
Wow, do we have time to get into that?
Yeah, Dolly Parton's production company, Sand Dollar Productions, was behind the Buffy the Vampire Slayer TV series.
Did not realize that. That's wild. Great thing she did.
Yeah, if you ever talk to, you know, some of the cast, they'll say, you know, maybe she wasn't on the set a lot, but she always made sure to send us Christmas gifts and, you know, she was aware of what was going on in the show and that kind of thing. So, you know, she didn't get a credit on every episode. Maybe she should have. Now, I think she made retroactively make that happen. Yeah, I think she made a penny off of everyone and maybe, you know, probably a bit more than a penny. I don't think, you know, she made as much as she made off the royalties for writing I Will Always Love You, but, it's just one of those little bits of trivia that a lot of people don't know. It's gotten to be a little bit better known over the past few years. Like you see it come up with in like the 10 things you didn't know about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Of course, it's in every one. It's like,
sure.
It's like the trivia. It's not quite there yet, but it's getting to be like the trivia question about what was the first video played on MTV? And I'm like, really? Does anybody not know that at this point? Is that straight? No, God, no. That was years after MTV existed.
Wait, what was it?
If you're talking about Money for Nothing, I mean, Money for Nothing had I Want My MTV in the song. Like MTV, that was the whole, Money for Nothing was inspired by MTV, not the other way around.
That's a really good point. Yeah. That's a really good point. How could they have played it first?
So you really don't know this? I've found somebody who doesn't know the answer to this trivia question.
Hold on, let me... No, I have no idea.
Wow, because I really did think that was like the one question that's like been asked so often that everybody knows it now.
Don't patronize me. Just give me
I'm not patronizing you. I'm genuinely surprised you don't know this. I'll tell you what. When we come back, I'm going to play the song when we come back. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Oh.
can stop you coming through.
Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. Jeremy, I don't want to be a jerk about this, but I'm going to just say it this way anyway. Do you feel dumb now?
Dude, so I have a YouTube channel called Lucid Memory. And I do a cover of Video Killed the Radio Star, and at the beginning of the video, it says, on August 1st, 1981, the MTV network aired its very first broadcast. It opens with footage of the Apollo 11 rocket launch and transitions to an astronaut planting an MTV flag on the moon, and then it goes on to say, Video Killed the Radio Star by the Buggles is the first song ever played on MTV. So not only did I know it, I knew it so well that I totally forgot that I knew it.
It happens to the best of us, man. Yeah, it's a busy holiday season. You know, I tell you, I'm running on about 2 hours sleep today because I just could not sleep last night. So, you know, it happens to the best of us.
Boy.
But that's why I was just so surprised, because you have an affinity for pop culture in general, but like 80s pop culture in particular, it seems like.
That's
why I was just kind of flabbergasted that you didn't know that one, because it's like I said, it's become that bit of trivia that it seems like everybody knows, to where the point that it becomes not trivia anymore.
Because
when something is like common knowledge, it's not really trivia anymore. So
speaking of which, later in the show, we're going to be discussing whether or not Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
We did that last year. You don't remember that?
No, I do. I totally do. Okay.
And we did determine for the record that, yes, Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all good there. But we are going to talk about movies for sure. And that is because we've got some big award nominations this week that I think that at least the best picture race for the Oscars is starting to come into focus. We've had two of the bigger precursor awards ceremonies drop their nominations this week, that being the Critics' Choice Awards and the Golden Globe Awards. And I'm going to say something that I'm surprised to find myself saying. Like the Globes have not been the most respected award around in the world. And they get this reputation for being a precursor that they don't necessarily deserve. And really, it got to the extent that the Globes were kind of a joke, to the extent that the corrupt organization that used to give them out completely folded. The Hollywood Foreign Press Association does not exist anymore. And the Golden Globes were bought out by Dick Clark Productions, which also does the American Music Awards and a few other, you know, awards deals, among other things. And I was surprised when the nominations came out this year that I thought they were maybe the most legit set of nominations I'd seen in a long time for the Globes. And I think maybe this time, while they get a little bit on their side that other shows don't get, because they do one set of nominations for Best Drama and one set for Best Comedy/Musical. We could debate on how they divide those up, and I think they screwed that up again this year too. But they also do 6 nominations in each category. So they get 12 nominations out there. The Oscars have 10. So that gives them a little bit of an extra, oh yeah, see, they had that nomination too. So yeah, they were right. They predicted the Oscar nomination. Well, they've got 2 that they can just throw away right off the bat. Critics' Choice has 10 nominations, but I think if we're looking at the nominees here First of all, you're going to see a lot of duplication between the two. And second of all, I think that it's a pretty solid set of nominations. So I wanted to go through just the Globes first, and then we can look at the Critics' Choice and see how they line up. So the Globes nominations for Best Motion Picture Drama are The Brutalist, A Complete Unknown, Conclave. I could waver on whether Conclave's a drama. I think it's a dark comedy, but okay. Dune Part 2, Nickel Boys, and September 5. Best Motion Picture Musical or Comedy, Anora, Challengers, which again, I'd put that in drama, but that's me. Amelia Perez, A Real Pain, The Substance, and Wicked. So those are the 12 that they put out. Now we're going to go through the Critics' Choice here, and you're going to hear 9 of those names again. So they're really only differing in one place. So Critics' Choice only does Best Picture. It's not separated by category. Nominees are A Complete Unknown, Anora, The Brutalist, Conclave, Dune Part 2, Amelia Perez, Nickel Boys, Sing Sing, The Substance, and Wicked. I think we could just say right now, 9 of those films being on both these lists are probably Oscar Best Picture nominee locks.
Look at The Substance coming in clutch. I would have never thought I saw the day that movie would get this kind of prestige nomination.
So excited to see that for this movie. And also excited to see that Demi Moore got Best Actress nominations at both. And I believe, I know Margaret Qualley got Critics' Choice nominated. Yeah, she did get Golden Globe nominated too. So both of the leads, because I get why they're running Margaret Qualley in supporting, but they really are kind of co-leads in this movie. Just really thrilled to see that. And also getting a lot of like screenplay nominations and even directing nominations. It's, in my opinion, the best movie of the year, and I'm really, really, really pleased to see that. But yeah, I mean, I think it is a lock for a Best Picture nomination. Now, do I think it's going to win? We'll see. But I think it's a lock. I think that all the films that have repeated on both of those lists, and I've seen 5 of them already, are Best Picture locks, you know, in terms of nominations. I think, and the ones I've seen Anora, I've seen Conclave, I've seen Dune Part 2, I've seen The Substance, and I've seen Wicked. I agree with all of those being in the race. I'm not as big on Dune Part 2 as a lot of other people are, but I get why it's in there. Like, it's not in my top 10, but it's just outside my top 10. And I'm not surprised to see it in there.
In some ways, these nominations feel a little more populist than years past. Not necessarily for the Globes, but if a lot of these do end up in the Oscar race, I will feel a little bit more like the gap is being bridged between what audiences want
and
what critics are honoring.
In fairness, too, of the ones that I haven't seen yet, most of them haven't played Pensacola. A Complete Unknown is opening Christmas week. That's the Bob Dylan biopic with Timothée Chalamet. The Brutalist has been a big contender along the ways, but it's a long movie and just has not opened here yet. It's kind of an indie film starring Adrian Brody, who's big in the Best Actor race this year. Amelia Perez, that's just my fault. It's on Netflix. Haven't gotten around to it yet. Nickel Boys has not opened here yet. Sing Sing has not opened here yet, which is... That's the one that is the like was in the Critics' Choice race, but it's not in the Globes race, which is kind of a surprise because there's been a lot of praise on that. And Colman Domingo is probably a lock for a Best Actor nom, and he is nominated at the Globes for Best Actor. The ones that got left out of Critics' Choice that are in the Globes are September 5, which also has not opened here yet. And then Challengers, which I have seen and did play in Pensacola and was initially released, was kind of surprised to see that one in there, even though it's one of my favorite movies of the year. That is a top 10er for me, or might have just dropped out of my top 10 in the last week or two when we've had some other things come out. Oh, and a real pain also. I'm sorry, I forgot to mention, is in the Globes race and not in the Critics' Choice race. And that's also in my top 10 for the year. Really solid.
I will throw my hat into the ring for Demi Moore winning award, either probably at the Golden Globes, maybe at the Oscars. And I think you and I have kind of discussed the lifetime achievement kind of thing. And obviously Demi Moore's got a long run left, but she's been a Hollywood darling for decades and never really got the acclaim that she likely has deserved for a long time. And this might be a career best for her.
But here's the thing, dude, she's in musical or comedy, which means she's up against like some of the buzziest performances of the year. She's up against Mikey Madison and Anora. She's up against Carla Sofia Gascon and Emilia Perez, and she's up against Cynthia Erivo and Wicked.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a tough, tough category. And honestly, like, as good as I think Demi is in that movie, I'd probably give it to Mikey Madison.
Yeah, I haven't seen Anora yet, but I feel that in the zeitgeist.
So, I mean, first of all, thought she was phenomenal in the movie, but very recently I just saw an interview with her and was just blown away at how different she is as a person than that character. That character is a night and day difference from the actual Mikey Madison. And I'm talking not just the way the character acts, but the way the character talks, the way the character moves, everything. It is a complete transformation. She murdered that role. She is so good. And as great as Demi is and as great as everybody else I mentioned is, I think it's hers to lose. Like, I really do. And I know I said we didn't want to get too much into the, when we were talking before we came on, we didn't want to get into detail about the acting, but like, if I think there's a lock where I think best actor is much more competitive category this year, I think Mikey Madison is a lock. The only thing that I think is maybe preventing that being a lock is the possibility of having the first trans actress win this award.
Which is who?
Carla Sofia Gascon from Emilia Perez.
Okay.
So we will see. But we got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake, birds and snakes, an airplane. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. Turn world serves its own needs. Dummy, serve your own needs. Feed it up an ox, speak grunt, no strength. The ladder starts to clatter with fear. Fight down high. Wire and a fire representing seven games in a government for hire and a combat site. Left to west are coming in a hurry with the furies breathing down your neck. Team by team reporters baffle Trump, tethered crop. Look at that low plane. Fine, then overflow. Population common food, but it'll do. Save yourself, serve yourself. World serves its own needs. Listen to your heartbeat.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Niles channel on YouTube. Jeremy, I don't feel good about this. I'm breaking a cardinal rule. That rule being that if that song is on, you got to keep it playing at least until Michael Stipe yells, Leonard Bernstein!
Okay. I did not know that was a rule of yours.
Yeah, that's the rule. I mean, it's just like, it's like if you're playing Suffragette City by David Bowie, you got to stay around at least until Wham Bam Thank You Ma'am. It's the rules. But yeah, at the same time, it is the end of the world as we know it, and I do feel fine.
Yeah.
And that world is the something to do with Spider-Man, I think, universe. That
I always, like,
Sony has created
universe.
That Sony has created outside of having the rights to Spider-Man, but not being able to actually use Spider-Man. And they've done all these terrible, terrible movies these terrible live action movies, because we're putting aside the Spider-Verse animated films. Those are amazing. No pun intended. But the Venom, Morbius, Madam Web, Kraven universe, as we know it, done. They dropped this news as they're dropping Kraven in theaters, which doesn't seem to me to bode well for the fact that I think they've just decided, okay, well, we're writing this movie off. You know, it's
$130 million budget.
We're just going to write it off, because you'd think they'd at least wait like 2 weeks. Put it out there in the gap between Christmas and New Year's when people aren't paying attention. You know, drop that news then. No, they drop it as the movie is being released, because the movie just came out Friday.
It's like how people are obligated to go to funerals. If we know this is the death knell of Sony, it's like, I guess we got
to
go.
To say nothing of the fact that the previous movie in this, not even really can you call it a universe, is still in theaters too. Venom 3 is still in theaters.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're basically just saying, hey, we got two movies out there. We'd appreciate it if you just ignore them. Which, I mean,
was Venom terrible?
I have not
as a whole.
So here's where we are at this point. You know me. You know I'm a comic book nerd. Mm-hmm. You know I'm a comic book movie nerd. You know I will see just about any comic book movie that comes out.
Mm.
I have not seen Venom 3, and I have not seen Kraven.
Yeah. Same.
Because, let's be honest, the four movies that they did before this, you got maybe if you put together the best bits of the first two Venoms, you maybe almost have one watchable movie out of four.
It seemed like some people liked them, though.
Yeah. I mean, I don't disagree. Some people did like at least the Venom movies.
I think.
Some people liked them in a so bad it's good kind of way.
That's kind of where I come in sort of.
And I think that there was some of that on Morbius too. Like that whole Morbin Time meme that got going and everything. Like that to the extent that Sony said, oh, people are reacting to this, let's put it back in the theaters. Not understanding that they were making fun of Sony. Like this is intrinsic to the problem at Sony. Sony didn't understand they were being made fun of.
No. And it's the problem isn't the characters. There are absolutely good movies to be made, probably revolving around all of these characters that they've botched. People are excited about a Kraven movie.
Are there?
I think so.
Let me rephrase that. Are there, in a sense, that if they were making a Spider-Man movie with Kraven as the villain, would there be excitement about that? Yeah, I mean, I'd be excited about that. Are making a movie about Kraven with Spider-Man nowhere in it? Is there excitement about that?
That's a good point. I mean, the same could be said about Venom. Very iconic character if you're a 90s kid, but the problem is he's so tied to Spider-Man.
But, I can actually see that the reason Venom kind of worked as opposed to these others is Venom actually has carried his own comic series. Like, Venom is a character that, once you get past the origin, can stand alone.
It's a good point.
And Morbius wasn't the worst idea in the world either in that regard, because Morbius is a character that has carried his own comics and has, also joined in teams like the Midnight Suns and things like that. Is a character that isn't necessarily strictly a villain. Whereas Kraven was never a hero. Morbius has at least had an anti-hero thing going. Venom has an anti-hero thing going. Madam Web has always just been a supporting character. Always. There is no excuse for them thinking Madam Web was a thing.
And you can see the studio notes in all of these projects. I guess it's just another example of studios learning the wrong lesson. Deadpool did good. It must be because it's R-rated. Let's make Kraven really gory, and then people will be distracted from the fact that it sucks.
Well, you
and
know,
I
my
don't
understanding
think that's the way audiences work.
My understanding is I haven't seen the movie, but I did watch the Screen Crush review of the movie.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's not even what they did. Like, they were like, you know, they could have gone like Terrifier and made it so gory that it was fun, and they didn't do that. They didn't, you know, that nobody's hooking up in this movie, you know, where even where it would be obvious. All they did was throw in a few F-bombs.
Yeah.
Just so they could get the R rating and say, oh, look, we're R rated. Yeah, it's just, it's the whole thing is that this whole set of films has just been lazy filmmaking. And yep. it has been a series of films that has shown a distinct lack of respect for the audience, and have been just naked cash grabs. And you know, I think that Madam Web might be the biggest example of that. And I hate to keep picking on this movie because it's just that everything about this movie is mediocre. But putting that aside, the choice of Madam Web as the title character of a movie is just insane.
Yeah.
This is a character that has literally never held their own comic.
Yeah.
And like, there have been characters that have been adapted before that maybe like never long-term held their own comic. And maybe, you know, yeah, I mean, Ant-Man is probably a good example of that, but they did hold their own comic. They have had solo stories. Madam Web has always been a supporting character. And the other three like main characters in that movie, any one of them would have been a better choice for being a lead character in a movie.
Commercially, but I think what you're saying is sound. As far as artistically and the ability to make a good film, I think you could make a good film out of pretty much any character if you handled
it
well.
Yeah, but there hasn't been any interest in doing that. Because
right.
These films have not right. These films haven't respected the audience, and they haven't really cared about I'm not convinced for the most part that anybody involved in these films, with the possible exception of the Venom series, has cared about these films or these characters at all. I did think
cynically, I feel like putting Madam Web in the title was another way to be like, oh, Spider-Man, maybe Spider-Man has webs.
Well,
so
sure.
They,
sure.
You know, like, I think that there is a lot of like poor market research or algorithmic ways that they approach things instead of, like you said, respecting the audience and respecting the character.
Well, and I wonder if that, you know, that was part of what happened with not using those other characters as the lead character, because all of those characters had Spider in the name.
Absolutely.
You know, Julia Carpenter, the Sydney Sweeney character, is Spider-Woman.
Are they referred to that in the movie?
They never use the names in the movie, but All three of those characters were either named Spider-Woman or Spider-Girl in the comics.
And then the villain in the movie is kind of a Spider-Man, right?
Yeah, sort of. That's a whole other thing. But, you know, Jeremy, is there? I will say that, and I was going to backtrack. I want to backtrack just a minute, because I did want to say that of the two Venom movies I saw, I did think Venom 2 was the better one. And I think that had something to do with Andy Serkis directing. And I think Andy Serkis did care.
Yeah.
And did maybe give a little bit of a, you know what, about the audience.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't think it was great, but I thought it was better than the first one. Are you in any way, is there anything you're going to miss about this other than making fun of it?
No. I think the best outcome of this, and you won't typically hear me saying that I like consolidation of things, but if Spider-Man can actually get involved with these beloved Spider-Man characters, that's like the best outcome for movie-going audiences. So, like, no, absolutely not. I like you said, I haven't seen the last several of them, and it's just because they've been so mid that there's been nothing that's like compelled me to want to go out and watch them.
Yeah, we're going to have to wait and see what they do in the long run. The other concern is that this may end up being what pulls Peter Parker out of the MCU, and I hope that's not the case. But, you know, we've got a ways to go. We'll see what happens there. We got to take a break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Start wearing purple, wearing purple. Start wearing purple for me now. All your sanity and wits, they will all vanish, I promise.
It's just a matter of time. So yeah.
Stars wearing purple, wearing purple. Stars wearing purple for me now. All your sanity and wits, they will all vanish, I promise. It's just a matter of time.
I know you since you were a 20. I was 20 and thought that some years from now a purple little, little lady will be perfect for dirty old and useless clown. So yeah, start wearing purple, wearing purple. Start wearing purple for me now. All your sanity and wits, they will all vanish, I promise. It is just a matter of time. I know it all from Diogenes.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. Jeremy? James Gunn?
Yes.
Remains the king of the needle drop, man.
Mm-hmm.
The absolute king. Nobody does it better. I don't care. You throw whoever you want at me. You throw Scorsese at me. You throw Quentin Tarantino,
Edgar Wright?
Me. You throw anybody. Even Edgar Wright.
All right.
That's hard for me to say because Edgar Wright is like, if James Gunn is number one, Edgar Wright is number 1A.
Yeah, no, for sure.
But dude, James Gunn's first of all, let's backtrack and like we're burying the lead here. The first thing from the new DCU.
Mm-hmm.
Is out. Creature Commandos is what we're talking about here. New series airing on Max. I think it's airing on HBO Linear also, but it's definitely on Max. This is the direct first thing under the new James Gunn, Peter Safran, DC Studios. Well, kind of, because the Chris Reeve documentary that came out this year also has that label on it. And that is technically the first film released, but this is the first project in the interconnected universe.
Mm-hmm.
And among other things, we'll get into a little bit of the meat of the series. We're not going to do like an episode by episode breakdown. In fact, Jeremy has not seen all three episodes that are out yet so far. I have, but once again, always just picking the right song for the right moment. And especially in this case where so much of the action is taking place in Eastern Europe, that like he's dug deep in the crates and he's pulled out stuff from Eastern European bands and from with Eastern European themes to it. And one of the things that he's leaned heavily on is that band that we just heard, Google Bordello. He's had not only has he had a few songs from them over the course of the series so far, they actually got drawn into episode 2.
Yeah.
And I'm a fan of that band. So just that blew my mind immediately when I saw that. Loved that. But just, oh, so effectively. And there's, I wanted to talk about another song that was used in the third episode, but with you having not seen it yet, I kind of don't want to blow it. But first of all, I wanted to talk a little bit about the structure of the show. Because it's very interesting the way this is going so far. Like every episode is really focused on the characters. Like, and each episode is focused on a single character.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, a lot of it is told in flashback, and the actual like action drive of the plot is relatively minimal in each episode. Like the first episode does its job with introducing things, but like the actual action that we followed over the course of the story, I think it's really taken place over what, maybe a day.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so far that what I've seen.
Yeah. And more than half of each episode has been more flashbacks telling you who these characters are. And I think it's been very interesting because we're getting to know these characters one at a time and falling in love with them And that's the other thing that James Gunn does. He takes these oddball misfit characters and makes you love them.
Let's talk about it first in its most broad strokes. Give me a breakdown about what the series is about.
So another thing that I think is interesting here, we get a little bit of insight on what's carrying over from the old universe versus what's not.
Uh-huh.
What they have said in so many words outside, they don't say this obviously within the show, but outside the show, they have said in so many words, if something is referenced in one of the new films or TV series, then it happened. It's canon.
Well, that makes sense.
If it didn't, don't worry about it. Doesn't matter. So, there are things that are mentioned in this show that canonize events of Gunn's Suicide Squad movie and the Peacemaker series.
Mm-hmm.
Parts of it. We do have Viola Davis back playing Amanda Waller. And the deal is, after what happened in Peacemaker, and just as a refresher, at the end of Peacemaker, Amanda Waller's daughter outed Task Force X.
Mm-hmm.
And outed her mother as being behind this, you know, plot to use supervillains to do the government's dirty work. So she is under orders now from Congress that she's not allowed to use human subjects. So they happen to have a whole bunch of non-human subjects locked up. And that's what they're doing. So they're taking these, whereas we had Task Force X in the past, we now have Task Force M for Monster.
Yeah.
And all of these characters are in some ways monstrous and are able to be written off as non-human. And it's a dubious classification here. She's definitely skirting the law here. But again, that's Amanda Waller. That's she does.
Amanda Waller.
Yes.
And it's also what James Gunn does so well, is find the humanity in characters that are not only misfits, but also could be categorized as freakish in some ways, whether it be Rocket Raccoon, Groot, who only has, you know, the one line of dialogue. But once you can empathize with these characters, it becomes the question of, like, what is humanity? And I think that's one thing that James Gunn is just so good at doing. As a general critique, I will say this is a known quantity. This is the thing that I knew James Gunn could do very well. What I'm still not concerned about at all, but what I would like to see is him switching gears and doing, and we will see it soon enough, but I want to see how he handles an earnest character like Superman versus this, because it feels very familiar, but it's also still something I really enjoy.
Oh, agreed. And, you know, it's another thing that's out there about this series is that he had, like, on spec written this up as a proposal and started writing episodes before it was even greenlit, just because it was something that he wanted to do before he had any inkling that he was going to be taking over the whole universe.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is pure uncut James Gunn.
Yes.
To the extent that, like, he's even animated into the opening credits. The opening credits every episode have a little vignette with each of the characters and a credit for the actor as that character. And then it ends with James Gunn at a typewriter, kind of like the old Stephen J. Cannell vanity card at the end of every one of his shows, where it always ended with him at the typewriter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's, uh-huh. It's got an animated James Gunn typing at a typewriter, and, you know, created for television by and written by James Gunn. Also, just a little fun moment. But there's also, like, I'm astonished at how much he's canonizing.
Yeah.
Like, not what he's canonizing from the old DCEU, just, like, stuff, the characters that we've seen so far, either mentioned or brought into actual flashbacks and episodes, where we're getting to see, like, you know, and again, you haven't seen episode 3, but I'll just go ahead and say, like, episode 3 has G.I. Robot with Sergeant Rock and Easy Company. I mean, we're getting DC's World War II characters getting brought into this show already. And there is talk of a live-action Sergeant Rock movie, maybe with Daniel Craig playing Sergeant Rock. So
to that, while we're on that topic, Frank Grillo, who plays Flag Senior in the show, will also be appearing in live action form in the upcoming Superman movie, portrayed by Grillo as well.
Yeah, well, that is meant to be the casting in this, is that these characters, when they show up in live action, will be played by the same actors that are voicing them.
It's pretty cool.
So, yeah, I think that's not the only one that we're going to see, because with Cersei being set up as the main villain here, Cersei being possibly Wonder Woman's archenemy,
mm-hmm.
we're going to see Cersei again in live action.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's only a matter of time. You know, I don't want to get too much into detail about anything, but
it's
again,
a pretty boring show.
And you know, you want to talk about finding the humanity in these characters. Episode 3, when you get to that, Jeremy, that's the one that's going to hit you. And there's some other DCU stuff that gets canonized in that episode that I hope that they're really teasing what I think they're teasing. Episode 3 focuses on G.I. Robot.
I figured. And to what we were speaking about, what I had alluded to, is early on in the first two episodes, G.I. Robot is very one note. But the fish girl obviously kind of sees something in him. And I'm like, how do you make that work? But Groot was able to become a character that's beloved with very minimal dialogue. And the fact that you're telling me in episode 3, it really focuses on this character, I'm sure we are going to get to see layers of depth to him that were not apparent beforehand. So like, I love that. And I do feel like this structure that you had mentioned, where it's kind of focusing in on each of the characters within each episode, is a great way to make us connect with them on a deeper level, instead of it just being an ensemble where they're all kind of functioning together the whole time.
Well, I'm sure we'll talk about this series more in the future, but unfortunately we got to go for this week. We will be back next week with more. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.